It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Acra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati.
Valati.
Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and
to hear?
Online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and today we'll hear from activist Amy Jones about what the police have been doing to protesters in Albany. We'll hear from Richard Rifkin from the Albany County League of Women Voters about redistricting and what it means for New York. And we'll also hear a tribute to Bob Fass from the Radio Unnameable show at WBAI in New York after he passed away last week. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Channel connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC-FM has closed its Hudson studio, and Wayfarm's Acre location is now closed to the public for an indefinite period of time. We are in virtual office mode with modified hours of operation for staff. All existing equipment and studio reservations, workshops, and gatherings are postponed until further notice. Our physical locations may be closed, but WGXC still wants to hear from you. We encourage your communication by email to info@wgxc.org and to WGXC's feedback line, 518-291-9492, where you may leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Kent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bindlestiff Family Circus of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Roger Hannigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that the New York State Marine Highway Transportation Company, a private barge operator that transports rock from the Peckham Industries Quarry in Catskill and the Colarusso & Sons Quarry in the city of Hudson, wants to moor up to three 250-foot barges in the Hudson River near a Germantown park. The U.S. Coast Guard proposed a series of barge anchorages for oil ships in 2016 that was withdrawn after much public opposition. The federal government eventually passed a law prohibiting any anchorages south of Kingston. But Germantown is north of there, and this proposal is for a mooring, a semi-permanent anchor for ships across from the Ernest R. Lasher Jr. Memorial Park, rather than an anchorage. Local officials say they were only recently notified about the proposal for up to three barges parked near Germantown while waiting for dock space across the Hudson River at Peckham Industries Quarry and the Lehigh Cement Plant, or after being loaded. Quote, "The other side of the river from us is industrial. You can see barges over there," unquote, Germantown Supervisor Robert Bury said. Quote, "So I don't get it. Why are you going to move barges from the industrial side of the river to the recreational side?" Unquote. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell has issued a letter opposing the proposal and is asking Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett, State Senator Daphne Jordan, and Representative Antonio Delgado to also speak out against the proposed moorings. John Lipscomb, the boat captain for Riverkeeper, is a member of the Hudson River Safety, Navigation, and Operations Committee, newly created to regulate river activity, and says the moorings are nothing to worry about. Quote, "To put it in perspective, as I travel on the patrol boat on the length of the Hudson River, there are hundreds of navigation aids, the red and green buoys. And what are they?" unquote, Lipscomb said. Quote, "They're a big anchor, a chain, and a buoy. There's never been any sort of evidence that this has a negative environmental impact," unquote. The Hudson River Safety, Navigation, and Operations Committee voted to back the project without hearing any comments from citizens. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Melanie Lekosevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Coxsackie Village officials April 25th adopted a $1.7 million budget that does not require a tax levy increase for property owners. Mayor Mark Evans said in a statement, and I quote, "This new budget will have a 0% budget increase for the budget year starting June 1st, 2021, end quote. He added, and I quote, "We felt it was critical with the very difficult year we have been through with COVID-19 to hold the line on taxes and spending," end quote. For a village homeowner with a property assessed at $100,000, the tax rate will remain steady at $1,322 for each $1,000 of assessed value. There will be no cuts in services, Evans said. He said, and I quote, "The goal was to preserve all services and programs, and we were able to do that," end quote. Water and sewer rates will also remain unchanged. Evans said, and I quote, "The water and sewer funds are funded by user fees in the water fund as we get the new water tank built. Hopefully sometime in the next year, we will have a payment to the Environmental Facilities Corporation projected to be $51,000 each year for 30 years, end quote. Work on the sewer plant upgrade continues, and the budget anticipates debt payments for that project. Evans said a portion of the $17 million upgrade will be paid by the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision for its use of the sewer system. The village board is also anticipating sidewalk replacements and work on the downtown revitalization project during the coming year. The mayor said the village board is also anticipating sidewalk replacements and work on the downtown revitalization project during the coming year. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Amelia Munson is reporting for the Times Union that New York will lose a seat in Congress and an Electoral College vote based on new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau April 26th. U.S. Census officials said if New York counted 89 more people and the population data for all their states remained the same, the state would not be losing a seat. Quote, "It's like voting. Every person counts," unquote, said Dan Lamb, lecturer at Cornell's Institute for Public Affairs. Quote, "Anytime there is a near miss like that, you start to wonder what could have been, unquote. Seven states, including New York, California, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, will each lose one seat in Congress. Six states will gain seats. Texas will add two seats, while Colorado, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, and Oregon will each gain a seat. Plus, states that are gaining congressional seats will also gain electoral college votes in presidential elections. It will now be up to the state's 10-member independent redistricting commission to decide which congressional seat New York will lose and how to redraw the map. The Census Bureau promised to deliver the full data set used for redrawing the maps to the state by the end of September. That information will pinpoint where the population declines took place. It also means that the final district maps that will be used for the 2022 elections may not be available until the end of the year. According to the data released, New York's population grew by 4.2% from 2010 to 2020, and more people moved out of the state than moved in, census officials said. The state gained 823,147 residents from 2010 to 2020 for a total of 20,201,249 residents in 2020. In addition, 28,451 fewer federal employees living overseas claimed a New York residence from 2010 to 2020. Utah saw the greatest population increase of any state, followed by Texas and North Dakota, West Virginia, Illinois, and Mississippi lost population. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Hudson Housing Authority, April 4th, voted to borrow $950,000 for 36 months from the Manufacturers and Traders Trust Company to fund upgrades and repairs for the residential buildings it manages. The HHA Board of Commissioners has determined that the physical condition of the building is, and I quote, below optimal standards and a substantial renovation is desirable, end quote, according to the resolution supporting the loan approved by the board. The buildings referenced are Bliss Tower and three nearby low-rise buildings made up of 135 units. HHA Executive Director Tim Matisse said the funds will be used to repair, upgrade, and, when necessary, replace elevators, roofing, and apartments. It will also be used to replenish the operating funds that have been used to start these activities. Matisse announced the HHA has now rented 8 of the 31 previously empty apartments. 6 recently vacated apartments now have new tenants. 2 apartments that were offline have been rehabilitated using existing operating funds and then rented. There are now 23 units offline that will remain uninhabited pending rehabilitation. The new debt will serve as a bridge loan to keep the authority going while it applies for a larger, longer-term loan. The larger loan would reliably support the Housing Authority's maintenance and repair needs and finance more construction and development on the land. The authority must submit a new 5-year plan to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development this year. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that under legislation backed by lawmakers in Albany and New York City, police officers who have been fired or at risk of being fired in other jurisdictions could not be hired in New York. Support for the bill comes amid a national reckoning over policing following the murder last year of George Floyd by now former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Chauvin was convicted of second and third degree murder as well as second degree manslaughter by a jury on April 20th. Quote, "We need to restore and protect the trust between our communities and the individuals sworn to protect them. We can't do that if we have people serving as police officers who other cities or states have determined are not fit for duty," unquote, Senator Brian Benjamin, a Democrat from Manhattan, and the measure's sponsor said. Benjamin said the bill will increase transparency around policing and protect the public from abusive officers. The bill also comes after local governments in New York were charged with developing individual plans for changes to local policing with input from community leaders and elected officials. Submitting those plans were ultimately tied to the release of state funding. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Yaron Steinbuch is reporting for the New York Post. The U.S. Supreme Court, April 26, agreed to hear an appeal in a New York case over the right to carry a firearm in public for self-defense. A lower court ruling upheld the state's strict gun permit law. The Second Amendment case involving the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association is the court's first review of gun rights since the addition of Justice Amy Coney Barrett. The court turned down a review of the issue in June before the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The matter is expected to be heard in the fall. New York is one of 8 states that limit who has the right to carry a firearm in public. The others are California, Delaware, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. Paul Clement, attorney for the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association and 2 residents, said the court should use the case to finally settle the matter. Clement wrote, and I quote, "Thus, the nation is split, with the Second Amendment alive and well in the vast middle of the nation and those same rights disregarded near the coast," end quote. The state called on the court to reject the appeal, saying its law promotes public safety and crime reduction, and it does not ban people from carrying firearms. Read the full story in the New York Post.
Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that quick action by a guest helped save a Greene County resort from fire on April 24th, Round Top Fire Chief Eric Coover said. The unidentified man saw flames and began dousing the fire with water from a garden hose, Quaver said. The fire broke out at about 5:29 a.m. in the main building at Rita Bowers Resort on Ravine Drive in Round Top. When firefighters arrived, the fire was nearly out. But we put very little water on the fire, unquote, Quaver said. Rita Bowers' main building suffered some cosmetic damage. There were no reported injuries, Quaver said. Management at the resort was appreciative of the guests who helped to put out the fire, said Anita Teeter, one of the resort's owners. The man was alerted to the fire, along with the other guests, when smoke alarm sounded. The fire is believed to have started from careless smoking, Quaver said. Cairo Ambulance assisted at the scene. Cairo Fire Company was placed on standby but was not needed. All firefighters were back in service at 6:30 a.m. Teeter believes the affected building dates back to the 1930s. It houses the resort's restaurant and bar. Teeter and her brother have owned the German-American family resort for 43 years. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup. The towns of Cairo and Durham have scheduled free cleanup days for residents during the month of May. On Saturday, May 1st, Durham residents can bring items to the town building at 7309 State Route 81 from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Allowable items include general cleanup waste, furniture, appliances, electronics, and no more than 10 tires. Household garbage, construction and demolition debris, paint, pesticides, hazardous materials, and vehicles are not allowed. Cleanup day is open to Town of Durham residents only. Identification is required as proof of residency. Cleanup day in Cairo is Saturday, May 15th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the town garage at 755 State Route 145. Residents may bring general cleanup waste, furniture, appliances, electronics, and no more than 4 tires. Household garbage, construction and demolition debris, paint, pesticides, or hazardous materials are not permitted. Only Town of Cairo residents can participate, and identification is required to prove residency. You can read the full story at porcupinesoup.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 87 degrees. A chance of shower Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 49. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 76 degrees. And a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 57 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Here, jazz archivist Mark Epstein joining Rob Saffer on the Overlook Show after the local news at noon. The Framework Show, where field recordings are turned into compositions at 3 p.m., features Bethen Kalu, The Jewel Ship, Embla Quickbeam, and Buddha Hariyata Chattopadhyaya. At 7 p.m., Jenny Getty and Amanda Lees talk movies on Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. And at 8 p.m., the Mostly Singles Show with Michael Wilde features duets, old 78s, and songs from New Zealand on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, April 27th. Early this morning, it is 37 degrees in East Chatham and 40 degrees in Hallahan Hill. A little rain passes through quickly this morning. Then temperatures climb to 68 degrees by 5 p.m. After dark, chances of light rain return as temperatures fall to 50 degrees. Tomorrow, the rain sticks around, growing in strength in the afternoon as the temperature reaches 76 degrees. Thursday and Friday are also looking wet, with temperatures hanging out between 60 and 70 degrees. The weekend currently looks dry. Pollen levels will be high today and medium tomorrow. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:33 a.m., low tide at 10:25 a.m., high tide again at 3:56 p.m., and low tide again at 10:38 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 53 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:34 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:53 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun has produced three bright coronal mass ejections recently, none of which are currently expected to hit Earth. Solar wind speed is currently 481 kilometers per second at 3.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 54. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeple. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Pat Linnan of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Say, Dad, I have an upset stomach.
I've got just the thing. Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms. Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms combine the smooth, pleasing flavor of lard with the soothing qualities brought to us through science.
It smells funny.
That's our special ingredient, uranium, the scent of the powerful atom. It's strong, but that's how you know it's working. Feeling better yet, sweetheart?
Sure am. Thanks, Dad.
Don't thank me. Thank science.
Dr. Whitaker's Larded Atoms in 5 or 10 ounce bottles at your local grocer.
If you think you're smart, then use your cranium. Start each morning with uranium.
I've written down the information. So please, Mr. DJ, read my dedication. Dedicate a record over the air to somebody special who doesn't know I care. Mr. DJ, make this dedication for me. Something special, something sweet and slow. Maybe she'll be listening. listening to your show. Then Mr. DJ, if she hears it, then maybe she'll know. So if it's not asking too much, please won't you read my request? Then maybe my dedication will say the words I'm too shy to confess. Oh, so Mr. DJ, I'm depending on you. This dedication could make my dreams come true. So Mr. DJ, make this dedication for me.
Ooh. Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We will release the state population counts from the 2020 census and the resulting changes in congressional apportionment.
Michael Cook from the Census Bureau announced Monday which states will gain and lose congressional seats based on 2020 census data. Overall, states that voted for former President Donald Trump gained 3 House seats. But the changes weren't big, says Acting Census Bureau Director Dr. Ron Jarman.
Overall, the effect is a shift of 7 seats among 13 states, which is the smallest number of seats shifting among the states in any decade since the current method of calculating apportionment was adopted in 1941.
The most recent decade also saw the second slowest rate of population growth in U.S. history. Jarman says 6 states will add seats in the House of Representatives.
Texas will gain 2 seats, and Colorado, Florida, Montana, North Carolina, and Oregon will each gain 1 seat.
And 7 states will each lose 1 seat. California, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, and New York. The Census Bureau says redistricting data will be available by September 30th. Doug Collins, a former U.S. congressman and big Trump supporter, announced on Monday that he is not running for office in Georgia in 2022. It's a blow to Trump, particularly to his efforts to field a conservative candidate to run against Republican Governor Brian Kemp. Meanwhile, 10-term Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio announced Monday he's running for Ohio's open Senate seat. Republican Senator Rob Portman is retiring, and the Republican primary field already has 3 candidates. In Kentucky, Attorney General Merrick Garland launched an investigation into the policing practices of the Louisville Metro Police Department in response to the police killing of Breonna Taylor.
It will determine whether LMPD engages in unconstitutional stops, searches, and seizures, as well as whether the department unlawfully executes search warrants on private homes.
The Justice Department will release a report on any constitutional and unlawful violations they find from the Louisville Police Department. This fall, the Supreme Court will consider a case from New York on strict limits to carrying guns outside the home, the first major Second Amendment case in more than a decade. The last big gun case to reach the court was District of Columbia versus Heller in 2008. The court ruled an individual has the right to keep guns at home for self-defense. Now to the pandemic. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki emphasized while the U.S. plans to ship 60 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine to countries like India, which is facing a devastating COVID-19 spike, it's not happening immediately and depends on FDA approval.
Right now, we have 0 doses available of AstraZeneca, and we expect there to be approximately 10 million doses that could be released if or when the FDA gives its concurrence, which could happen in the coming weeks.
She says another 50 million doses are in various stages of production. Finally, President Joe Biden is promoting unions through a White House task force, which will advise how the government can help workers join labor unions and bargain collectively. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Ross Bratellum. Thanks for listening.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for the flowering maple trees. As maple sugaring season wraps up, look for the beautiful flowering trees, especially the red maples. They are bursting with color. This time of year, there are so many colors to notice, especially spring ephemerals and the colorful warblers returning. However, the red maples are one of the first to flower as winter fades. They are a sight to behold. Look out along the mountains and hillsides, and you will see more and more red coloring the landscape. In Vermont, there are 6 different native species of maple: sugar, red, box elder, striped, mountain, and silver. 4 of the maples put out their flowers before their leaves: the sugar, red, box elder, and silver maples. Wait a minute. Aren't the leaves supposed to come out first? Having leaves helps many plants process nutrients and sunlight required for the task. So why do these trees flower before they grow leaves? These maples have a different strategy. They use stores of carbohydrates and spring sunlight to help make flowers, then drop seeds, all before the leaves unfurl. Early flowering ensures that the leaves will not block out the flowers from the sunlight. Next time you go out for a walk, check out the beautiful display of red, sugar, box elder, and silver maple flowers. Then, after their leaves come out, look for the striped and mountain maple flowers. Let's celebrate the maple trees all year long.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk, Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Jamaica Miles, who is one of the co-founders of All of Us, a group working on police reform, racial justice issues in Schenectady, I assume the Greater Capital District. And there was a press conference held on Friday in Schenectady, both to deal with a prior arrest situation in Schenectady where people were arrested after protesting at the local police station following, unfortunately, another one of the deaths of young people of color by the police, but also several other people who have been arrested in Schenectady and also were arrested on Earth Day Thursday at the occupation site at Albany at the South End Police Station. So Jamaica, I know it's a very complicated situation. Do you want to give us an overview of what is going on and what All of Us is doing?
Sure, absolutely. And honestly, it's not all that complicated. To be clear, the arrests that happened on Thursday, they happened in Albany, and then the Albany police transported 2 individuals to Schenectady on a warrant that was based on an incident that happened in Schenectady on a previous day. We're talking about the coordination of state-sanctioned violence against Black and Brown folks, right? The city of Albany had said that the encampment that had been in front of the South Station was going to be left alone, that they were peaceful, they would allow them to occupy that space. And then they decided on Thursday to make an announcement that the individuals, the organizers, and the supporters of the encampment that were on the ground had 15 minutes to pack up and leave, or that they would be forcibly removed. Not that they used those words, but that's exactly what happened. On the ground at the encampment, there were at least 12 tents. There were thousands of dollars of supplies, including food and water and heaters and blankets. The organizers of the encampment had plans to give blankets and food away to the homeless, something they had been doing for days. This was day 6 of the encampment. The organizers, who include but are not limited to Lexis Figueroa, Michaela Foster, Casey Charles, Legacy Casanova, Samira Sangari, and others, had been on the ground for 6 days specifically because of police brutality that had happened the week before when Lieutenant Anderson hit Chandler Hickenbottom in the mouth with a bullhorn. That's where we are.
Now, I understand that it sounded like that Mayor Sheehan of Albany, despite prior agreements at the encampment occupation, would be allowed to continue, actually pretty much gave the order to remove the tents and to get the occupiers out of there. How has she responded, and what are people reacting to her role in this?
Well, the fact that Mayor Sheehan and Chief Hawkins both are in agreement with how the police came in and brutalized the organizers and activists and supporters on the ground is more than disheartening. Mayor Sheehan, after making a statement previously comparing the encampment to what happened on January 6th in DC, we knew then and there where she stood. It was really clear. And the community is hearing Mayor Sheehan loud and clear that she is supporting a police state. She is supporting state-sanctioned violence. She is supporting police brutality. And both Mayor Sheehan and Chief Hawkins are willing to lie to the public about what happened. But what they didn't count on is that the community would have independent, unedited video of exactly what did happen.
Now, I've seen one of the issues raised, you know, besides, you know, the excessive force being used and the lack of notice, was that a lot of the police officers involved in this destruction of the encampment seem to have covered up their shield numbers so they could not be identified, which, if not against the rules, or if not against the law, certainly against the rules. What has been the response to the fact that the police did that?
We are seeing again what happens when there is progress in our nation and in our localities. With the repeal of 50A that gave us the opportunity to know the records of police officers and have a transparency around any accusations or discipline they've received, officers have now found a way to try to protect themselves, that they are covering up their name.